Okay, you welcome back to the programme, and we welcome back to the programme, Brendan Devaney. Brendan, how are you?
I'm the very best, Greg. Good to see you.
Good to have you back.
Yes, good
What's
to be
going
back.
On?
We're moving and shaking again.
How many years have you been doing this nonsense
this
now?
This is season four, Greg. I can't believe it. We would have thought it, yeah, but time flies quick, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Listen, it's great, and it's a huge success too for you in the station. Right, okay, and what a Monday to come back on to after what I thought was, all things considered, a great game of football in Battle Buffet yesterday.
Yeah.
And a superb result, and I think, you know, I'm really pleased for the players because even afterwards, I think rather unfairly but understandably, Patrick McBurty was asked about, you know, Michael Murphy no longer being in the team. I thought that was put to bed. But anyway, I think he handled that expertly. And as I say, I'm not criticising it. I can understand. But I think just in the post-Murphy era and with the new management team, I just thought it was a cracking game. And it showed great resolve. And it was super finish. Yeah. I could hardly speak.
I was the same. Funny, I was on with Des Cahill yesterday evening. And when we spoke about the game, he says, I can hear the emotion in your voice.
Mm.
And for, I know like, people say, right, it's the first league game, it's 2 points, you know, what are you talking about? But the pressure that this team and management was under, and what they had, I text Paddy Carr last night, the lead in this game,
text back?
It couldn't be horrible. Yeah, he hasn't even read it yet. But,
hey, I text him too.
He's had a vintage.
A thousand times.
He's had a vintage where it takes a few days to come back. But no, listen, hats off to him. Like, I've never seen a first league game where there was so much pressure on from the rhetoric of what happened with the management in terms of the appointment of the manager. Already, Greg, with people not joining the panel, with injuries, with retirements, like Michael, you mentioned Neil McGee, the vultures were already circling. You know, I'm out around the county, a lot of people were questioning, oh, this is going to happen. It was all doom and gloom.
Who's he?
So for them to pull out this performance, particularly like, when we were 1-6 to 3 points down, it was, I don't know, it was about 25 minutes on the clock at that stage, Greg. It was looking bad. We're at home.
But it was bottle and grit and determination.
We reeled off 7 points in a row from that, Greg, and it was amazing turnaround. And you just seen, I mean, it's a brand new team, basically. Five of the team that started against Armagh, you know, you had five debuts, full debuts.
We're at the point now, really, and when I say we, I mean me, is about managing expectations, all right? Because, you know, we're on this roller coaster of after a great win, thinking, right, is this the year? Or after a sad loss, writing the team off for the year, right? So we've got this high and low and high and low. And then, of course, understandably, I suppose, to some extent, with social media, people react instantly, okay?
Yeah.
We need to sort of manage our expectations here, don't we? And say, right, cracking start. Let's see where we go from here. You know, and let's see what the season. I mean, this is early doors. It's a building process. You know, let's not run away with ourselves. And in the opposite, if it was a defeat, let's not.
Yeah,
crap
I get
on
you.
Ourselves,
I get, you know? No, that's in normal terms. Let's put this in the context, Greg. This is just 2 points. It means nothing. Like, we could be beat by Tyrone next week. This is a very weakened Kerry team that came up to our home patch. Now, we were very weak. They were very weak. Okay, but they're all Ireland champions.
Very weak?
Well, they had five of the team started all Ireland final.
Mm.
Now, there was three of the lads that played that came on in that final. So you'd say maybe there's eight, right? Now, they had their full back line in there. And they were very solid in that first 25-minute period. But then as we grew into the game, Greg, in terms of that new team, now we have a whole host of people to come back. So you can't say nothing about this result in terms of the whole season. All
that
means
we will, though, you see that.
Well,
I
think if you look at it, it's impossible to say because of all the players that are out.
Yeah.
So once they're all back and then you get a few games together, then you can start to see maybe where the team could go. You know?
We're seeing foundations, though, and any great team's built in foundations.
Listen, Brendan, and some of the performances here, you see, I mean, all the debut guys come on, chipped in. You'd have to say, obviously, McCaughan was unreal. I mean, some of Patton's kickouts. I mean, my God, like you're on about inches from 60, 70 metres away. Sean Patton can land a ball. I mean, it's just crazy how good this man is at what he does. And of course, we give him a terrible giveaway goal, which we did last year to Championship. Yeah. People were like, oh no, here we go again. But after that, I have to say...
Goalkeeper, like, this is not a criticism, and I suppose you have to take it in the round, but he hates the goalkeeper ahead of play. Like, and I know it sort of was a breakdown, and that's
yes.
When you're watching,
I mean, taking that out of it, right?
Okay.
But Greg, he's the best keeper in Ireland.
Not doubting that for a second.
Like, my mate in Galway texts, "Give us Patton, we'll win all Ireland." Right? That's why people outside the county are saying it. But you know, I have to mention and Darryl Boyle as well. You know, he had a tough time under Bonner. Brilliant player coming up, looked like the sky was the limit for him. couldn't get into the Donegal team then. And he had a phenomenal game there yesterday too. And I really love that type of thing. You look at all the new guys coming in, Greg, and how the team gelled together and what they did. And then
how
you look at the guy
that
gets...
is down to selectors? Because we're pulling players from all over the place. Downing's in the show and West. So, you know, is that something that gets overlooked maybe when we talk about it? That maybe, you know, the whole team is out there looking to get the best that's out there?
In terms of what, the whole county?
Yeah.
I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, someone just said that to me. That came up there last day. But we were on about Unions in 97 when we won that famous championship. And it was, 14 years from everything was the south of the county then, and they were the hotbed, and there was nobody up here. And now it's gone everywhere, you know, and that's only good for football. And, like, I just listened to Keelan McColgan's interview, and he's talking about the club that, and for what he would mean now to the people in Neve Patrick and Muff, and how now the whole that village is looking up to him, and like he's back with his club. Like, that's massive.
It's great you could see that too, for such a young player to see the importance of it, not just for himself, but for family, for the club, for the community.
And the smaller club, I suppose, the more it has a big effect, right? Because if he was from a larger club, he's another county player. You know, it doesn't mean the same. So for someone to step up from a club like that there and do what he did yesterday, this is his debut, Greg, you know. I mean, it was unreal. I mean, the 3 points he kicked, they're as good as scores you'll see. And they had three of them, you know.
I'm going to start a GoFundMe page to get TG Cahir covers for the camera. I don't know if they only do it when they're up here, so it always looks like we've nothing
get
but sideways.
Right.
Oh,
yeah,
come
yeah,
here,
yeah.
lads. I mean, this is not technology. It's like a cover that goes on the camera and extends out about a foot.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, it looked like, you know, a YouTube video at times.
Listen,
from
1995. I was up for us, like, doing the game with Oisín, but the whole barrage of staff, surely one of them could at least have
a
cloth. You know, yeah, I mean...
Come here. Listen, it was good to see the game. Right, anyway, so I like where you're coming from with this in terms of the conversation, where we're going, where we're at the moment. You're going to be discussing this, though, and all the action. You're joined in studio by Donegal All-Ireland winner Big Neil Gallagher. Armagh star Aaron Kernan's also joining the conversation, and also talking to Maxi Corran. Yeah. The ladies have had a difficult start to the season.
Difficult.
We'd love to always be talking off the back of a win. But
he's actually here, Greg. He heard about your wee coffee machine in the kitchen there. So I've got him up here for the interview because he was busy tonight. So he's going to be, we recorded a piece, but the rest of it's all live, and every show will be live now. And hopefully, Greg, as time goes on, we'll be able to get text in and feedback, more feedback from fans on what they thought of the weekend's action.
Listen, a show like this, we talk about current affairs and stuff, and there's a huge interest in it. We've hundreds and hundreds of texts, but there's another thing that people love to talk about, especially when they want to switch off from news a little bit, and that is sport, because opinions are like, you know what, we all have one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And listen, we've I think Big Neil been up, he's coming up to the studio tonight, you know. We're going down to the concert then for Creasa down in Nora, myself and himself, and Aaron Kiernan. I was up at a Francie Bailey in Cross McGlen, the places you find yourself, you know. So it was a couple of Saturday nights back, so I said to Aaron, would you come on for the first show? But he's a great man, Aaron. Me and him do a bit of stuff on a podcast during the week there again. Really, really knowledgeable, so he'll help round up the whole league, because, of course, our buddies in Throne, face to feet, and now we're playing them next week, so they're going to be back to the wall a wee bit.
Well, you see, that's the thing, because, you know, we're going to be going into the game buzzing, right? They're going to be going... The sport always throws up a story, and it's often the story that gets us hooked to watch it in the first place, isn't it? Because they're going to want to bounce back from there.
Yeah, but the fact, if they won, this would be a bit different. But now, because the league's so short, you've got to win your home games.
Yeah.
It's desperate. Now, if you pick up one away, that allows you a wee bit of grace at home. But because they've lost now, they are gunning for us. But it's Donegal to Rowan. There'll always be a few fireworks, you know.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. All right, so that's looking good. That's the deal debate just after 7 p.m. This Monday, and of course it's a pod as well. Lots of people listen to the podcast. That's released on highlanderradio.com not long after the programme itself airs. Good to have you back, Brandon.
Good to see you, Greg.
All
thanks.
Right, okay. Appreciate you go and have a cup of coffee with Maxi there.
Cheers.
The coffee machine, by the way, is not half as exciting as Brendan makes out, just in case anyone thinks we've got this big deluxe thing here. It ain't like that at all. All right, great to see Brendan back in studio and on air again. 7 p.m. tonight, that's the DL debate, as you heard there. He's going to be chatting to Maxi Corran, looking at the start of the season for the teams he's involved with. And of course, reflecting on that win, Donegal beating Kerry, and also roundup of all the action in Division 1s and 2s. And the guests are Neil Gallagher and former Armagh star Aaron Kernan as well. So that's a cracking lineup. Everyone knows what they're talking about there. We were chatting to Jean about her books. The caller says, I have Jane's... Sorry, Jean. Jane. I was thinking of Jean Curran for a second. I have Jane's first and second books, and I absolutely love them. Can't wait to get the third book now. Well, it's there available for you. And finally, just on this one before the break, so if the ministers didn't know about this issue in health, it's yet another scandal and we aren't aware of it. What were they doing? Why did they not know who was responsible? All questions that will come out over the course of the next number of days, one would imagine. Because if it is as outlined in the newspaper, incredibly significant, and definitely something that needs to be pursued and investigated. All right, staying with sport, I suppose. Well, not I suppose, I am. Greyhound Racing is returning to Lifford this spring with a grand reopening taking place on the 2nd of April. Which is only a couple of months away. The track has been closed, of course, since August 2019 after 60 years of racing after it was put up for sale. We're joined now by the general manager of the Lifford Greyhound Stadium, Seamus White. Good morning, Seamus.
Hi, good morning, Greg.
I suppose a lot of work has gotten to the point where you can announce the official opening date and start talking about the season ahead.
Yes, it has been indeed, Greg. We've been, working behind the scenes over the last, just over 18 months now since April 2021. And we've been engaging with the Greyhound Race in Ireland, local businesses, etc. So, yeah, plans are well underway. And, yeah, we're looking forward now to the next 8 weeks to the official opening date.
I mean, obviously, you know, the Lifford Greyhound Stadium, you know, you have your hardcore racing fans that want to go and watch it. Also, you would see staff parties there, hen parties there, whatever it might be. You wouldn't know who might turn up on a Friday night for it. But there's been a break. So really, to some extent, to some markets, it kind of maybe feels like you're starting from scratch. So what are you doing to sort of entice people to show them that this is a good night out and sort of reconvince people who maybe have found something else to do that they should be going to the dogs?
Yes, and indeed, Greg. When the track reopened in 2003, it was regularly getting, you know, attendances of over 2,000 on some nights. You're right, we are rebranding it, we're relaunching it. We're partnering with the Old Docks in Derry, who are going to be running the restaurant side of things and the catering at the track. And there is a new tote model, which is the heart of the new model that we're proposing. So whereas the other tracks in Ireland are funded in some part by the Irish government, this will be entirely self-funded. So it's all the revenue from the new tote system will be coming into the track. And to your original point about the, you know, we want to appeal not just to the established Greyhound fraternity that regularly went to Lifford, but to a whole new audience as well. You may have seen recently that Shelbourne had a student night where over 4,000 students turned up just prior to Christmas, and they're going to have another one in the near future as well. So we want to grow, the appeal to not just the local community. And we've already, the messages have gone crazy over the weekend. So there'll be people traveling from Scotland, England, you know, all across Ireland to the reopening. So that the buzz is,
I think people more are acutely aware of everything nowadays. I think it's a different world to that was in 2003. And you know, in terms of funding for greyhound racing in this day and age, or there was some conversations about animal welfare issues. And I'm not suggesting that any of that's an issue at Lifford, but there is maybe a little bit of reputational rehabilitation, not for Lifford Greyhound Stadium, but for greyhound racing. Or maybe that's already been done and that's been shown with the turnouts you mentioned at Shelbourne. As I say, I'm not going to focus on, I don't want to be focusing on anything negative, but, you know, there are maybe perceptions out there that you're going to have to work on, or maybe enough time has passed where that's not as big an issue now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, the greyhound welfare is one of our number one priorities at the track. I've been involved in greyhound racing all my life. I've had a number of retired greyhounds, so we want to take that message out to the general public that this, yes, they're, you know, greyhounds are superb athletes in their own right when they're racing, but they make tremendous pets as well. So Greyhound Racing Ireland have been working behind the scenes over the last few years to I guess reestablish that reputation, and we're going to build on the work that they're doing, but we're also going to have a local effort to work with local greyhound charities and show that, you know, the rehoming and the welfare of the greyhounds are our number one priority. And to your point, Lifford is one of the safest stadiums in Ireland as well. It's a fantastic racing surface, and yeah, we'll ensure that that reputation is upheld.
Is there much excitement on the circuit amongst trainers and breeders and what have you, that this track is back open for business again?
Yes, absolutely. For the people that have been there and visited some of the other tracks in Ireland, you'll see it's one of the best, if not the best track in Ireland in terms of the facilities. I might be a little bit biased there, but
we'll forgive you.
It's fantastic. And people I was at Shelburne just before Christmas, and there were the inquiries from the trainers there, and there was a lot of support shown. So they're willing to make that trip up the road to brace their dogs there again, because they know how fantastic it was in the past, and they're very much looking forward to it. And it's the crowd and the atmosphere as well, which, you know, it can be sometimes lacking. It's obviously, it was a difficult winter for everyone, but we're optimistic now that we're moving into the springtime, that it now is the right time to relaunch Lifford.
Yeah, and I think in terms of job creation, and in terms of business and its impact on the wider community, there can be a bit of snobbery in that, you know, maybe it's not celebrated as much if it's in retail or you know, in different areas, yet it's celebrated if it's in others. And obviously that's kind of be attributed to the value of the jobs. I get that. But I mean, at the end of the day, this is another employer open for business, and there's a dividend then presumably for the wider community too when you're attracting hopefully large numbers to an area.
Absolutely. When we open, there's going to be, you know, up to 60 full-time and part-time jobs at Lifford. And as we grow the business, so we're concentrating on getting the racing going again, but we plan to have the facility, a fantastic facility, open as a community hub. So alongside the racing on a Friday and Sunday, we'll be holding events on Saturdays during the week. So it'll be open for bookings across the board as we move through the summer. So, you know, that number of jobs can only grow, and it brings something back to the heart of, you know, the Lifford-Strabane area, which is sadly, you know, it's been lacking in the last few years, that community hub that people can rally around and go and meet at. So, yeah, there's some fantastic plans in the schedule for us.
And obviously we're heading into a period of time where, you know, people are tightening the strings a little bit. You know, you talked about this being self-funded, so it's bums on seats, people through the gates that will keep this going. In what could be a difficult trading year for an awful lot of businesses, how resilient are you to, you know, to that? And how resilient is the business model, of course, you know, because it's like any business. Is there not taking a risk? Well, there's a risk in everything, but do you know what I mean? Like, how confident are you that, you know, that you can make this work?
Look, Greg, it is an experiment. We're completely changing the betting and tote model behind the scenes, but we're confident that this is what the industry needs. Our partners, Tote UK, have basically done this model with horse racing Ireland. They've shown that it can be successful. We're taking it a step further now with the Greyhounds. It's an even better model. So they've got a proven track record. We're tapping into their expertise. So that's, let's call it an external source of revenue. The internal source of revenue, we're very confident from the interest over the weekend, there's going to be thousands of people there when we open up. It's then about sustaining that attendance going forward. So keeping things fresh, having, you know, live music, having live bands, etc., having, as I mentioned before, community days, etc. We're going to work with, as we have done in the past, with local charities, sports associations to have, you know, sponsored meetings, etc. So we're very optimistic that certainly the summer months are looking very bright. Yes, we'll have to sustain that through the winter as well. And okay, it's a challenging environment, as you said, but it also.
But it's like a lot of I mean, obviously, this is dog racing, and I won't hold you much longer. Greyhound racing, but there's all it is also like a licensed premises, you know, selling food and drink. It's like a lot of businesses. Presumably, you hope to have a really really good summer, and then that helps you over a few dark months. Maybe a good Christmas gets you through till March, and the whole show starts again. I mean, that's it. Does kind of reflect the hospitality industry pattern, really? I suppose, does it?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the one of the key elements that I mentioned, our partners from the Old Docks. They're bringing their reputation as a fantastic food provider into the
their
arena.
Booze. So they're bringing the booze. That's what we're interested in.
And that as well. So we're bringing the draft beer back again. So okay. We're all looking forward to that.
Well, listen, come here. As a 60 jobs, it's really not insignificant that at all. I wish you all the success. And thanks very much for joining us. And 2nd of April, let's see what comes of it. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you, Greg.
All right, bye-bye. Take care of yourself. All right, that is Seamus White there, General Manager of the Lifford Greyhound Stadium. Greyhound racing to return to Lifford with a grand reopening taking place on the 2nd of April. Then there's events every Friday and Sunday as well. So we wish them every success in that. I mean, obviously, there are going to be people that believe it shouldn't be happening at all and that type of stuff. And I respect those views, and maybe some of them might be texting in. The mocks are starting soon. And I didn't know, I probably should know, that some parents are out there getting bills, right, for €120 per child for their child to sit their mock examinations. I thought we were supposed to have something close to a free education in this country, but not. The cost of the new mocks will be €120 per child. It covers the examination papers, of course, and correction by outside examiners and the writing paper and what have you. But if you don't pay, what happens? If you don't have the €120, many people don't have the €120. If you don't have it, what happens then? It's a big bill to get on top of everything else that parents are facing at the moment. Do you think that's a fair price, €120? I won't mention the school because I'm not sure how widespread it is, if it's one particular school or many of them. But I've been contacted by a couple of parents that the €120 is beyond them at this time with everything else that's ongoing. It's not far off. The money being allocated to help people pay their electricity bills. Do you have a view on that? 086 60 25,000. 086 60 25,000. Okay. Monday Focus now. We speak to Dr. Dennis McCauley, who is the County Coroner. Dennis, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate your time this Monday morning.
Good morning, Greg.
And it's a timely conversation. Not so long ago, we had a guard in studio as part of a community guard information, and they took an opportunity to give out some information in relation to the guard's role in people who are feeling suicidal or what have you. And it was off the back of what they had recognised is a peak in attempted suicide or suicide. But there's no figures on that as such or nothing. It's not anecdotal because the person speaking from a position of knowledge. But we should have more information to back this up so we understand the extent of an issue. We can address it presumably as much as we can. We can put the right resort. This information, it's really important we have it, Dennis. It's really what I'm getting to.
I think so. I think that we know that for each family that's affected by a death to suicide, it is just so devastating. Occasionally, it can be anticipated that there's a risk, but quite a lot of the time, it just comes out of the blue. And then there's a sort of, as you say, people then try to, then in the context of Donegal, we're saying, well, what is the suicide rate in Donegal? What's the suicide rate in Ireland? Where are we? Is it going up? Is it going down? And I think it is important to sort of visualise what the figures are. And recently there was the end of last year, there was the publication of the Irish probable suicide deaths. Now this, we had a presentation on this. It was Philip Todd and Anita Manelli, who this was a research project that looked at the amount of suicide in Ireland over the last a 4-year period, and there's probably about 500 suicides a year in Ireland. And just the the study is very good because we, where do we, just briefly, where do we get our statistics from? As you know, at an inquest, if there's convincing evidence beyond reasonable doubt that the death was due to suicide, we recognise it as a suicide. But there are occasions where it is possible that it's a suicide, but we haven't got enough evidence. So this research group went and looked at all unexpected deaths.
Just to give us an example of that, so we understand it, where it might not be conclusive. A single vehicle collision, for example, would be one of those situations whereby you might you can't make an absolute determination unless there's other evidence there.
See, I think I am very conscious, and I'm almost speaking as a GP rather than a coroner today. But at the same time, the things that you would notice would be drownings can be quite difficult to assess a person's intent, intention, or otherwise. I think if somebody has a history of alcohol use or drug use, if there is an overdose. And then such as road traffic accidents, such as that. So those are, there are situations where as a family in a coroner or as a doctor, you suspect, but that can't be proven. So this is a research that sort of tries to catch all of the deaths due to suicide.
Okay, in relation to that, before we explain how that might work, Dennis, currently, are the figures underrepresented for the reasons you've just outlined as well? But we are also a small community and, you know, families react to different things in different ways. Some might use it as an opportunity, say, for instance, to promote positive mental health. Others might not want it talked about at all. Because you're the coroner, maybe this is an unfair question, but is that reflected in the figures? In other words, in an underreporting? In other words, the sensitivities of a very, very difficult situation?
Yeah, because this is a very difficult topic. You know, we always have to be very sensitive when we're chatting about it. But it was illegal in a paradoxical way to commit suicide up until recently. It was a sin in some faiths. So naturally, and as well, there was this instinct that, you know, then there was the whole issue about, you know, where you were able to be buried, all these sort of awful things that added to the whole trauma. So yes, was there an instinctive position that you didn't want to add, you know, further trauma to a family by it being described as a suicide? I think that that's even reflected in this research, the amount of times that the coroner was more confident and more willing to say that it was a suicide has increased over those 4-year periods. That nationally there would have been sort of vagueness in the verdict, but then there was more confidence. It went from 69 to almost 80%. So what you say is true in almost all aspects, perhaps even in coroner's courts also, that there was a tendency to be vague, and now there is more tendency to be more positive. Not more positive in the die.
Understood. Yeah.
In the
determination.
Now, is that cruel? Is that a cruel thing to do? No, it's not. I think it's important to know, because as you said, there is a vacuum when there is a figures vacuum. People don't know how to reflect it. Just to analyze figures slightly. In that, there's suicide is awful. Thankfully, it would appear to be getting less common. Ireland, in regards to suicide figures, is actually on the lower scale from a European wise. Now, each of those is devastating, and each of those is fine. But to actually see the incidence sort of stabilizing, going down, is a positive thing. Now, we don't have figures for the time of the pandemic and the lockdown, and those figures will be coming shortly. So we don't know, but overall it is dropping. But as is always, Ireland has probably a disproportionate amount of deaths in under 25s relative to the rest of Europe. And that has always been the case. For young men, it's the most common cause of death under 25. So I think having the figures talking, I think having the figures is important. Then, as there was a an excellent pilot done in Donegal for the actual Connecting for Life. And this was a situation of, was it better to open the Pandora's box or better to keep it closed? And we realized from research, it's better that we talk about suicide. It's better that as a community-based, not just health professionals, but everybody talks about mental health and suicide. If there is then somebody who's deemed to be at risk, that the resources are there
to wrap around them and to
help them. Those are the two important things. And that's why it is a very sensitive topic. It's one that I'm slightly uncomfortable chatting about, but I think it is important.
We all are, Dennis, and I recognise that. And keeping it the Pandora's box closed, is that for fear of what sometimes you can see is clusters? In other words, you'll have one suicide and then you might see others in a community or in a friends group.
I think that is very valid as well. I think more of the Pandora is sort of generally, it's important to talk about suicide. It's just important to talk about it. We instinctively don't like talking about it. Here am I, and I'm usually quite comfortable on the radio, but I'm uncomfortable talking about it. It is an uncomfortable topic to talk about, but it's very important that we do. And as you say, you know, there are areas in times of my life as a GP, I have noticed it where there is, particularly in that under 25 group, where their coping mechanisms of young males and their life experiences are different, that they can react in a very, because one of the things that the research shows is that in the time you're most likely to, basically, just I'll give you three statistics. The ratio of male to female is 4 to 1 of suicides. The majority of people will have had mental health issues before that, but unfortunately, we are finding that the people under 25 aren't. They're not on the radar as clearly as some of the older people, and these people probably at that time of their life, at that intervention or that chat took place, the risk of suicide just goes away. Unfortunately, if you have mental health issues and they are difficult and you have a lifelong issue of either mental health issues or physical illness, that is a risk factor all of your life.
Substance addiction, presumably, as well.
Yes. I always think that the under 25s, that there is a chance to close that door.
That's
the part that I get upset
Yeah,
about.
For sure. And maybe it's not me and you to have this conversation. I've kind of had it with others in the past in that we react, or at least peer groups react, I think, in certain age groups, whereby, and I understand people want to pay their tribute, but it's seen as, tributes come along the way that in some way now the person's cured or better or in a better place, that they have taken a decision, and now, you know, the phraseology that can be used. I don't want to upset anyone who's used it in very good faith, but if you are under 25 and you see lots of people pouring out love and affection for someone, and it's portrayed as that person now has been released of something, that they're better, in a better place, is a phrase that some people actually even use, and I can understand where that commentary comes from. As a old man myself, I can sort of see the woods for the trees, right? But I'm concerned that maybe young people in my life, it puts it on the table of options. Because
I think the way I would answer that is that I would advise anybody to, unfortunately, just visit a family that have been devastated by the suicide of a young person. It is just the numbness and the pain that family feel, and that completely and totally outweighs any other issue that you mentioned there at all. That if they just visualize and empathize with that poor family, particularly a young, healthy person, usually a male, I'm just talking about the under 25s, that there is just a very temporary feeling that they have, that they feel on a particular day, there's no other way out other than this, then if a brief intervention could stop that and they never have it again. And if you love someone like that and that suddenly happens, the devastation is extraordinary, life-changing, and forever. And that's why I think that completely trumps the last few statements.
And might be more difficult to process and come to terms with on any level than another type of sudden death.
And I apologize for someone. You know, there are certain things that are not unexpected, and that at least allows you to prepare for something. But then when something is completely unexpected and potentially, you know, just stoppable, that makes it an awful experience.
A caller says, my brother did suffer from mental health issues but was in a good place when he had a single vehicle car collision. We as a family talked so many times about it. Did he crash the car on purpose? Was it an accident? Did we miss something? Was he suffering again and we missed it? But my mother was happy, if that's the right word, that it was put down as an accident and not suicide. I've tried so many times to say, Mum, it's okay to use the word suicide. We really need a way to accept suicide is not a dirty word. But the evidence would suggest, and obviously people move at different paces individually, that we, and it's probably reflected in the coroner's figures you mentioned, that we are starting to be able to use the word or that finding more than we might have in the past.
I think that's a perfect sense. It isn't a dirty word. It's an awful tragedy. But I think it is important to talk about it, not so much to add pain to the people that have committed suicide, that have died through suicide. It is to try and prevent further suicide.
And you know the problem is, and this is why it's so complex, and correct me if I'm wrong, there is a balance to be struck in completely destigmatizing anything. Not that there is a stigma, but let me just phrase that way, to destigmatize something, but at the same time, not encourage or promote it.
Oh, I agree completely. And I think it's by information. It's about talking about suicide and its effects. I think the last thing we would want is in some way to say that it is acceptable. You know, once again, one has to be very careful from the
people. It's very hard. I think our listeners will understand that it's difficult to choose the words.
If we can educate people that suicide is... it's not a dirty word, is that it's an awful tragedy. And if we can do anything we can to stop it, because suicide is not a dirty word, it is a horrendous tragedy. And people left behind, their lives are changed. And if we can, that's what we need to allow people to see and to talk about suicide, not so much to stigmatize those, but to prevent further ones. And okay. I think that would be the best summary that I could give.
You know, and it's perfect. We'll leave it. We'll leave the summaries at that, because you've done far better than I tried to do. So tell us how this research project will work then going forward. I know you've outlined elements of it, but what's going to happen?
I think they mentioned at the meeting, and I happened to just mention it. I had any question. I'm sure Anita and Philip are sort of pulling their heads out. In that, what they're going to do is there is another research thing. The CSO do suicide figures, and it's very good. But I'm not sure about the whether they catch all the probable suicides as well as this research, but it's still very reflective. So we have figures over the years, so the CSO figures will be able to tell us the general trends. But I do think that there will be, I think that Dr. Todd and Anita were saying that there will, in a medium term, be countywide figures given as well, which is good. I think that there are so many different ways of, as a statistician, there's so many different ways of trying to get the right figures. But I think this is the best way of doing it. And I would hope that it will help us to understand and to target the resources as much as possible. And can I just talk about the what is available at the present minute in Donegal, which is really important? I think for your listeners to realize is there's just visualization of talking about suicide support structures. But if there is somebody who has self-harmed or who we would feel has a death wish rather than a suicidal intent, there are resources in at accident emergency. If you present with self-harm, there will be follow-up from that. If we feel there's somebody who is who is in severe danger, immediate danger, we will act. But then there's a thing called the scan nurses, which are fantastic service, absolutely wonderful service, who will come and who will get involved at a very early stage. So I think the Connecting for Life has been a wonderful achievement. I think it was a very well organized and a well run campaign. And I think it just needs to be, I think we just need to remind ourselves of that, listen, it's okay to talk about it. It's okay, particularly for young people, to talk about mental health. It's okay to go and speak to somebody about it. It's okay to see a health professional. But if you feel that way, there is help available.
And can I add to that too? Because, you know, obviously on programmes like this and elsewhere, we have to talk about any deficiencies there are in mental health services. And of course, there's been an awful lot of publicity about CAMHS of late. But it's the initial contact that often is the difference maker. Okay, in terms of access to long-term care, we have work to do in that regard. But if someone needs to speak to someone in this moment now, there are lots and lots of people that are there, lots of organisations, and it's that initial contact that is often the important one. So when we try and have productive conversations about where there are gaps in mental health services, I hope it would never discourage someone from making that first call or first contact, because it is crucial and critical, and the other stuff will follow. But make that first call, reach out that first time. I speak to so many people, Dennis, and I'm sure you've had, that have been in a difficult place and thought there was no way out. Some endured it for a day, some endured it for years. But once they unburdened themselves of that, to the many, many professionals that we have out there, or even a close friend, it changed their life forever. And as I say, it's so important that people make that initial contact, because people are so important. And this is the point I tried to make a week or two ago. Everyone is so, so important to all of us. You know, we would do anything for anyone, wouldn't we? And the thought that anyone feels that there isn't any hope or nowhere to turn, please don't think that, because you're a beautiful person and we need you. Make that call and reach out to someone. Dennis, obviously Gardaí have access to figures about attempted suicide. The emergency services would, GPs would. I'm asking you this as a GP rather than a coroner. I don't think we collate that information. Should we be? Or maybe we are.
I think there is collation of it. I think the deliberate self-harm, there are actual figures on that. And I can't give you the
exact... No, that's okay. Okay, that's good if we are.
We actually do that. No, we do. And I think that because even by that sheer thing of them, if they go to casualty immediately, they're in the system of the actual deliberate self-harm system. Okay. And it is, I think there are, all the information is there. Unfortunately, yes, I think... Not talking about the CAMHS service particularly, it's just that there's a number of reasons for that, but there has been an explosion in mental health issues in adolescence. Now, some people would argue that, okay, we're trying to medicalize normal behavior. That may be to a certain degree, but there's been an explosion of psychological issues of anxiety and low self-worth in our adolescence. Now, it's so easy to sort of give glib answers as to why that is, but I do think that self-awareness, the self-assurance that we would have struggled with as adolescents, but we're able to manage, is much harder now. And of course, we can say
we really, and I said this on the show again, and listen, I'm not a doctor or a politician, but we really need to examine if what we are currently doing and how we are engaging with our teens and supporting them is working or exacerbating. And I would love actually another full conversation on your phrase there, which I hadn't heard before, medicalizing normal problems, because I think sometimes young people can think they've got a problem because we've given it a name or whatever it might be, when in fact maybe they don't. And I just think in us trying to make sure we don't upset or offend or we care for everyone, that we're not in some way contributing to it. I'm not saying that's what you were saying in that phrase, by the way. It's just a concern I have as a parent.
I actually agree with you, but I think within that context of people, young people with psychological issues, there is a tendency to medicalize sort of normal children's behavior. But even when you subtract that away,
there's this huge presentation with self harm and what have you is what you're referencing, which is
if you look at the rates across Europe, the suicide is sort of settling, except in that younger group. And that's not only is it higher than they would like, but it's in certain countries it's actually going up. And I think we have to be vigilant, and we have to be aware and be as proactive as we can about that.
Yeah. And we need to make sure that our children aren't getting their mental health advice on TikTok and other social media outlets where they're also actually in that process. They are a product to certain people. Thanks for such a wide-ranging conversation there, Dr. Dennis McCauley. I really do appreciate it. I think we are moving in the right direction, and we can address a problem when we can recognise the extent of it, or an issue, whichever way. But for now, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's greatly appreciated. Is Dr. Dennis McCauley, of course, a GP, also the county coroner. I'll get some numbers together for maybe some of you that might want me to read them out to you. I'll do that. We have a quick break to take. Stay where you are. Okay, some numbers for you here. If you were affected by that last conversation, you can contact the Samaritans on 116 123. AWARE, 1800 80 48 48. Pieta House, 1800 247 247. Jigsaw, you can email help@jigsaw.ie, or to start a conversation, text hello to 50808. I'll read that a different way in case it's easier to track. Text hello to 50808 to start a text conversation. And we appreciate Dr. Dennis McCauley coming on with us here. Don't dismiss me as a fanatic or simpleton, but our young people need to be brought to Jesus. There's a vast empty space that should be filled by prayer and relationships, either God. That's your religious views. You never have to apologise for your religious views, certainly not on this programme, by the way. If that's what you believe and that's worked for you in your faith, well then, you don't have to preface it with an apology. I understand where you're coming from, but I fully respect your religious beliefs and you believing that that might help other people. Just to warn, and for all the drivers on the Point Road, Lochross Point, all the potholes, which I'm after wrecking my tyre on, please ring the council or councillors to deal with this, okay? That's the Lochross Point on the Point Road there. Lifford, hi folks, I'd be grateful for a shout out to my own retired racer Skinny Jeans, who won at the old Lifford track back in 2013. She'll be 13 years old on the 2nd of February, and hopefully she'll get a visit to the hallowed sand for a wee walk when the track reopens on the 2nd of April. That comes in from Linda Boner, Skinny Jeans, and it's G-E-N-E-S, not like denim jeans. Okay. Hi Greg, is there a new app for Highland Radio? My app has disappeared. I don't know how to answer that question. There's an app. Is it new? I don't know what the story is. I'll get on Tosheen and give you an answer tomorrow, okay? Listen, the website is an app. So if you go on your mobile device, go to highlandradio.com, it presents as a website, right? And you can go save as bookmark and bookmark it to your phone screen. And it operates the exact same as an app does, by the way. So go to this is what I'd suggest you do. Go to highlandradio.com and whichever iPhone you're on or Android, you click the three dashes or however you add a bookmark. It'll ask you where you add your bookmark. Add it to your home screen, right? And it's the exact same as an app, and it's regularly updated, 100% stable, and Fanula spent a fortune making it so. So that's what I suggest you do. There's a wee video going around that suggests you do something else, but I'm not getting involved in that. Fair play to your show contributor, David Cullinan of Sinn Féin, their health spokesperson, for holding the government to account. Well, he's responding to an article that held him to account, but we'll see how it goes. I understand where you're coming from. I've Jane's first and second books. I got them on Amazon. I'm getting third book now this week. What a great read, okay? It was great to have her in too. Really interesting lady. Hi, I wonder, do you know what time the special concert for Chrysler is on in the Aura? There's no time on the tickets. Doors open at 7, show starts at 8. Okay, doors open at 7, show starts at 8. All right, I think that's just about us for this Monday morning. I'm off tomorrow, so you have the pleasure of Donald Kavanagh's company between 9 and 12. I'm back with you bright and early. Well, certainly early. We'll see how bright I am on Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show. Have a great Monday.